Welcome back to the West Side Discussion Podcast, the first and only podcast dedicated to West Side Discs. My name is Jay. Thank you for listening. This is episode 23. Today I'm joined by Sai Ananda. This is Sai's first year on the team. Sai, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you so much for having me on. I love talking disc golf, and I love all the interesting questions that you guys come up with.
All right, great. Well, then let's get right into it. Let's start from the beginning. How did you get started playing disc golf?
So my dad and my brother were actually really into it, and I was more so like, I don't know, I was much so an artist, and so I just kind of liked going for a hike and like being outside. And so it very much started like completely recreational with like no sight, you know, beyond just like, oh, I love going out, throwing a few discs and picking a few flowers. And my dad and my brother were, I would say, pretty competitive, and they were always doing field work, and they were really like the driving force and would always just invite me. And eventually I kind of got tired of like sucking, you know, I got tired of being like, you know, only being right. able to throw 90 feet. I couldn't make a putt, you know, I couldn't approach like near the basket accurately. And then my brother and my dad were just getting better and better. And so my frustration, I was like, ugh, oh my God. And then like they would all throw far past me, and then I would look over at them and they would be like waiting and like looking at the trees, because I had every one throw for them was like three or four throws for me. Right. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like holding up the whole group. And like, so eventually I wanted to get better, and I was like, wow, this is way more fun when you've got skill. Like when you can throw it where you want it to and like make birdies. Whoa, that's way more fun. And so once I kind of like found a little bit of like my competitive side, it just mm-hmm. kind of, you know, I had the bug from there basically after that. And it wasn't long after that that I started competing in tournaments even.
What kind of steps did you take to get better? What was your like routine like?
I guess like my dad, when he was younger, was always like into sports. He liked tennis and he liked street skating and like snowboarding. And back in his day was when the VHS tape was like super hot. And so he always liked the slow-mo that mm-hmm. you could do with the VHS. So he would get like all of the cool snowboarding tapes and all of the cool like old school skateboarding VHS tapes. And he would do a lot of, you know, at the time it was form analysis. And so he would be looking at, okay, where's the knee going? How are they bending their shoulder? And so that was something that he had always practiced and applied to disc golf. And so we would always watch the slow-mos of Paige Pierce. And I remember Will Shustrick was like a big inspiration back in the day, and like Nico LeCastro, and of course Paul McBeth. And so I just watched a lot of people's form. Luckily YouTube is like an amazing classroom.
Right, absolutely.
And then a lot of field work. Yeah, just to keep like moving. You know, we would watch the form analysis and then we would get all excited to go play disc golf. And I lived on a university, so we would go out to the football fields or like the soccer fields, and we would just mm-hmm. go throw until our arms were noodles just to see how far we could get it.
Did you film yourself, or were you just watching the pros?
I actually didn't film myself until I feel like quite a long time after I started playing. And I even had like other people film me before I actually started doing video analysis of myself. I don't know if it was because maybe I was like shy or I was scared, you know, to like look at my own form and maybe see how bad it was or something. But it wasn't until when I started playing in advanced, like after I got out of juniors and I was doing advanced and like when pro was kind of in the horizon, then I started to like look at things and take a little bit more videos and kind of like refine things.
Got it. Okay. And so you said once you kind of started practicing and getting better, that's when you started doing some tournaments and things. When did you transition from just playing like local tournaments to touring?
That was kind of like That was like a really long process, honestly. 'Cause when I turned pro, my like personal life had gotten rocky, and so I was having to work a lot to kind of like support myself financially and stuff like that. So it was always this like one arm was tugging at disc golf, which like, which was my passion and, what my heart wanted, obviously. And I was, relatively skilled at the time, so I thought, I had a pretty good chance. And then there was also the like my livelihood and like, making sure I have a retirement and savings and making sure I have a decent job and like, good work history so you can buy a house and like the normal, American dream thing. So it was for like, I want to say like 4 or 5 years, it was this huge pull between like, all of my extra money, because I didn't get sponsored until I think like a year after I had turned pro, like in 2016 or 2017, when I was sponsored with Latitude 64. And so up until that point, like all of my savings and extra income was going towards disc golf. So it was making it really hard to like buy a car and like, take all those steps, in my personal life. So for like 5 years, it was just this like battle of like, oh my gosh, I want to go on tour so bad. And I know that like going on tour will also transform my skills too. Like once I get out there and I'm competing with these high level players, I know that my skills are gonna like grow exponentially. And so it was really, really tough. And I always tried to play like, my dad and I would always say more and better. So 1 year I would do four tournaments, and then the next year I would try and do like six. And then, the next year, if I had extra money after that six, then boom, I was starting the year on the plus, and then I could keep saving after that and maybe try to do, eight the next year. So it was kind of like a little bit of a slow crawl, and it was kind of good, I think, the way it happened, because I got a lot of mistakes out of the way, and then it gave me a lot of like experience rather than like Eliezra, like boom, immediately fresh on the scene, immediately competing on the top in the spotlight, like my anxiety. Ugh. So looking back at it, I was kind of like, at the time it was frustrating because I was like, oh, I was never where I wanted to be on either end because I wasn't like committing either way. I wasn't going full on disc golf and like getting a van and living by the water because that was kind of scary, I came from a pretty low income household, so I didn't really have anything to fall back on if I did decide I wanted to live in a, a van by the river. And so it was just kind of this slow roll of like, and then there's also the like the sponsorship juggle of like, you need a sponsor so you can get out there and you can go play more tournaments, but you don't the sponsors don't really want to take a chance on you unless they see you out there doing things and like making moves and playing in those bigger tournaments. So I got caught in that little like paradox of like, oof, I just need to play more tournaments to get a sponsor, but if I had a sponsor, I could easily play more tournaments.
And so you said you kind of toured a little bit before you got sponsored by Latitude.
On and off, it was never more than like a couple weeks in a row with like my boyfriend or, with my mom or dad. So it was never like a full tour. But I mean, I always went to US Women's. I always went to Worlds. I always went to, like Beaver State Fling. And I had these like core events that I always went to. And then I always kind of tried to build, upon those core events. But like US Women's, Worlds, and United States Women's Disc Golf Championships were always like, you have to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the seal kind of like broke when Latitude 64 sponsored me. And it wasn't like a huge sponsorship, it was just kind of like gear and like maybe some reimbursement and entry fees and stuff like that. It wasn't even anything serious, but it made me feel bona fide. I made me feel like a pro and like I was kind of like making steps on that end and stuff like that. And then it also kind of like, I guess it was a little bit of my into the industry and showing, sponsors what kind of sponsoree I am, I guess. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
what you have to offer.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was kind of cool, and 'cause I think there I had had like Gorilla Boy was my sponsor before that. And you know, that was awesome. They gave me a bag and then I sold it at the end of the year and paid for a couple of, you know, tournaments, and that was super duper awesome. But that was Latitude 64 was like a big manufacturer, and that was really cool, and that was when I think the momentum kind of changed a little bit towards my pro career.
And how did you get connected with them? Is that something you reached out and applied? Was there, did they reach out to you?
It was actually kind of completely random. So I'm from Washington, and there was this disc golf course called I can't remember which one it was. Was it? I think it was called Downriver, and it's been demolished now. And I met this guy, and he introduced himself as Toad. And I was like, just kind of, he seemed like a knowledgeable pro, and it was me and my dad at the time, and then he ended up grouping up with us. So I just met this random guy, and he was a Trilogy sponsored player, and he'd been playing forever, and he was like running tournaments, and we just kind of like immediately kind of became friends a little bit. You know, we were talking disc golf, we were talking form analysis, and he was like, you know, talking about, you know, like hip engagement, rotation, and I was like, I was eating it up because at the time
Right.
I was really hungry for, you know, my sights were on Paige Pierce, and she could already throw 400 feet at the time. So I was like, I gotta get it going. And he just kind of was like, do you have any sponsors? Like, he kind of like recognized, you know, some skill and some potential, and kind of took interest, you know, in my dad and in my personality and stuff like that. And I was like, no, I was interested in Innova at the time, just because that was like the big sponsor in the area. It was like Discraft, Gateway, or Innova in the area at the time. And I think that's where a lot of people start. And so that's Innova. And there were a few, like Shauna Cater and Melody Bailey were a couple of Innova sponsored players at the time who I looked up to. And so that was kind of, you know, a little bit of the goal. And I think I had reached out to them a couple of times, and I had reached out to like Keen a couple of times, but I digress. He, you know, asked me what kind of sponsorships that I had, and was like, oh, would you be interested in this or this? I could put in a word for you with Latitude 64. And I was super stoked because I was a big fan of David Feldberg at the time. And he had come and even played a couple tournaments in Montana, and he was up there with like Christian Dietrich, and like all of the local pros were like really like taking a lot from him, and he was really into form analysis at the time and stuff like that. And so Toad, he turned out to be I can't remember his last name, but his first name was Jeffrey. And it was like Jeffrey R or something like that. Really cool guy. And he put in a word for me at Latitude 64. And within a couple of weeks, Latitude 64 had reached out to me and made a proposition. And within like a month, he had put in a word for me. And I had like, you know, signed the contract from his word. And so shout out. I wish I knew his last name. He was kind of the pin drop that started a lot of momentum.
All right, and then you were with Latitude up until last year, correct?
Yes, and that was a awesome, like amiable handoff, because they were willing to offer me more financial support and more of like a salary to allow me
With
to go on
Westside?
tour. Yeah, with Westside, and I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like internal like squeaking and squealing. I was like, this has been like the whole goal for the last like 6 freaking years of like what I've been putting my energy and like my efforts into. And so I was just like, I was so hyped. And then like the Westside in combination with like, but my boyfriend's last name is West, and West Side, and just like,
Oh, really?
yeah. So my
I didn't know
boyfriend's last
that.
name is West, and then mine is
Okay.
Sai. So whenever we play doubles or stuff and stuff like that, or we need a team name, it's always West Sai.
Oh, that's
And
awesome.
then
That's
I'm,
yeah, that does work out.
Yeah, and I live in the Northwest, and so it just kind of like it seemed to all come together very serendipitously.
Yeah, very cool. So how did that happen, as far as like switching over? Was that something that you approached them about?
At the time, I was kind of like exploring and like I wanted, as grateful and as amazing as it was to have the opportunity with Latitude 64, I was still really, really hungry and looking for more opportunities. And so I think I had reached out to Beacon Sports Management, and then I had also reached out to Blake Schaffer with Schaffer LWS Sports Management. And so I was kind of like just put myself completely out there. I was like, I need help and I feel like I deserve more support for like the skills that I have. Does somebody like, can anybody give me any advice? And so I ended up getting some advice from Beacon, and they had some contacts with Trilogy, and so he was like, what kind of options would you like? And so obviously I gave him, dream list of, manufacturers you'd want to be sponsored by and stuff like that. And then he
Right.
came back to me with Westside Discs, and I was like, oh my gosh, that would be amazing. No bag switch, like I would be able to transition super smoothly and put all of my effort into like traveling and just kind of like focus on competition and not worry about, different molds and different discs. And I made the transition to Trilogy fairly well, but that's still a lot of like mental effort that has to be put in when there's already so much mental, demand when you're competing in tournaments. So that was immediately, I was like, oh my gosh, that would be a super awesome fit. And so then we just kind of took it step by step from there to see, what kind of a good fit it would be and see if everything kind of matched up with, my goals and what they wanted to offer. And then it ended up coming together and working really, really well. And I'm getting to know Gabe and Jesse has been super awesome.
Yeah, they're great guys. Just to back up a little bit,
Yeah.
kind of talk more about touring at the very beginning. You had mentioned that you were able to get a lot of mistakes out of the way. So, what kind of advice would you give somebody maybe looking at going out touring for the first time? What are some mistakes that you learned from early on touring?
I mean, like, even before I went pro, I made like a couple of scorecard errors that were really, really silly. And I was super glad, like, one of the scorecard errors was like super meaningful. And we could probably get into that story because that was a super impactful moment, like, in my amateur career. And the other scorecard error was negligible, but, knocked me down and I got, less in prize money and stuff like that. But I guess one takeaway from the years and years of mistakes was I've learned that like to be kinder to myself when I do make the mistakes. 'Cause looking back when I was harsh on myself when I made the mistake, it only made recovering from it even harder. It made learning from the mistake even more difficult when you put yourself down for making the mistake.
Yeah.
So just having kindness and a little bit of forgiveness in the moment, if you get distracted and you, rush yourself during a putt and it means the difference between second and third place or something like that, obviously the weight of those emotions is like super duper huge. And I think that it's amazing that there are so many emotions associated with literally like such a simple thing. Like I could go step out in my backyard and make a 10-foot putt right now and not even like think twice. It's such a mundane thing, but we put so much pressure on it because it means so much to us. And so I think that we can take that emotional reaction and then like kind of embody it rather than like feeling that emotion and what that emotion means and then like moving on and growing from it. And that's something I've only really recently learned, I think, in the last like year or so. Because there's been so many rounds where, you miss one bad putt in the beginning of the round and maybe you have a few negative thoughts, then you make another, missed putt, and then you play a whole round like that, and then by the end of the round, you're like mentally exhausted and you're like super bummed out about your round because you were all like grumpy throughout the whole round. You weren't executing good throws. And then you leave the course, discouraged or, perturbed or upset. And so I've spent so many rounds like that where I've left the course like just feeling upset. And I've spent so many years like, oh man, I don't want that, That's not why I play disc golf.
Right.
And so kind
Yeah,
of like
absolutely.
reframing how I perceive mistakes. It's a lesson I'll never, I will forever learn over and over and over again.
Yeah, a lot easier said than done.
Yes,
Yeah, you mentioned
seriously.
my second ever tournament. This was we were still doing the paper scorecards before everyone was doing the PDGA, and yeah, I got turned in and. It was added up wrong on my score. I wasn't even one keeping score. The guy just told me my score, and I said, "Oh, okay, yeah, whatever." And so he turned it in, and the TD came to me and told me that they messed up. And not only was it one more stroke than what they turned in, now they have to add two more on. In my case, I was already on the bottom of MA3, so it didn't impact me too much. But what was your scorecard story?
So it was in 2015, and I think I was playing like FJ 16, 16 and under. And I was playing, I think my card was a girl named Kaylee Campbell, who I, was she Trilogy sponsored? No, I think she was Innova. It was Alexis Manduhanu, and then there was a fourth girl. I don't know if I could quite remember, but we were playing the final nine, and oh my gosh, these girls had played so well. I had played so well, and our scores were so tight. And Kaylee had like shown so much grit in the final round and was putting like a champ, and it was just like an amazing event and great things were happening, and I was playing very well and managed to get myself into second place, and then below me was Alexis. And so we were playing our final nine, and I was just enthralled in the moment, and Kaylee was continuing to play really well and make really good putts, and there was just great energy. And so we had finished the final nine, and we were adding up scores, and they had started like taking pictures and doing interviews and kind of like getting a little bit ahead of adding up scores. So scores was kind of like an afterthought, just to like, give you color and of the ambiance and the situation a little bit. So it was a little bit rushed, and so I sat down. I was adding up scores with my dad, and so I added it up, and then I had him add it up, and then he added it up differently. And so we triple checked, and he was right. And so we added it up correctly a fourth time. I'm not even joking. And so I erased it, and I put the same number in. I didn't make the correction. Some sort of like brain lapse where I erased a number and then put the exact same number down, and then just turned it in, and it meant the difference between second place and third place. And oh my gosh, that hit me like a dagger to the heart. I cried so hard.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be rough.
Yeah, it was a huge learning moment for me, and I ref in reflection, take your time. Okay,
Yeah, that's
Mother
very
Nature
nice.
never rushes herself, and she is always on time.
Well put. Exactly. So you mentioned, kind of in the moment during tournaments, being forgiving of yourself, kind of your routine through the tournament. What do you have any like pre-tournament routines that you go through?
I guess, like for me, I guess like going on tour too, stress levels are definitely heightened. You have more demands, and you just have a lot more things to pay attention to, and you're also in a lot of like foreign environments. And so stress management was really, really huge for me. And I would recommend any player, old or young, to look into and practice breathing exercises. I think that can help anyone in on the course and off the course. And that was something, meditation and breathing exercises were something I relied on really, really heavily post round. and pre-round even, the cool down and like reminding your body that you're no longer in competitive mode. You're in like, okay, I can, I can relax a little bit. And that was really important for me, especially when you're going like day to day to day to day. You really have to like get as much of those little micro rests as you really can on the day to day to, avoid, overworking yourself. So I think breathing exercises, and it's hard to say, specifically which ones, I wish I could prescribe. It's hard to say which breathing exercises are really gonna like connect and, resonate with each person. I've spent, I don't want to say my whole life, but I've spent a very long time, I guess I've spent my whole life breathing. I can say that.
Confidently say that, yeah.
But I've spent a long time just researching breathing exercises and different modalities and different practices and, what works for different like types of brains too. What works for, the structure of, for certain people. And so I've spent a lot of research to find the breathing exercises and like the meditations that work for me. So I can only just say I encourage, people to just do whatever research you can. YouTube, honestly, I say like a second time, it's an amazing classroom.
Absolutely, no, I agree. Yeah, I started doing. I got the YouTube Premium a while back, and you can't go back after doing that. But just
Oh
yeah, so
gosh,
much
yeah.
great learning content on there for sure.
Oh, I guess, I mean, I don't have any association, but I mean, the Huberman Lab podcast has been super duper popular in the last like handful of years, and he has a couple of really good lessons on breath work and breathing. And a lot of his information is just like backed by contemporary studies, and then he usually gives you links to the studies that you can look at yourself, and that's about as good as it gets.
All right, very cool. What was the name of that one again?
It's the Huberman Lab podcast. You can find it wherever you find podcasts.
Perfect. We'll check that out then. So when you're playing, especially that you're doing more, disc golf pro tour events, whether you're on coverage or not, there's still a lot of, they have photographers out there. Does the cameras, does that affect your play at all, or are you able to get rid of that in your mind?
Thought that the cameras would affect me, but I think it's a weird like situation where social anxiety like works in my favor to where like my bubble is so small that I like almost don't even notice the camera
Oh, really?
guys. Yeah, like it's actually kind of crazy, and I think they actually do a really good job of practicing like not interfering with the card as much as possible. And then I guess it depends on like who the filming crew is, 'cause sometimes I know those guys and it's not really that big of a deal,
Oh.
having some friends on the cards. If AJ is on my card, I can exchange some weird awkward jokes with him and we can have a laugh, and it's usually a pretty good time. Or the boys at Ace Run, I always love asking them weird questions and messing with them.
Yeah, now that this year on West Side you've had a few like practice rounds that they filmed, I'm just kind of curious, like the behind the scenes for that. Is that the West Side crew out there? Who's filming that? Like, how do those practice rounds happen?
So for most of them, it's been Ace Run that I've been
Okay.
with. So I've been with Felix and Conrad. I think it was with them at like Portland and the Beaver State Fling, and it's been super fun. I mean, behind the scenes, we just laugh. We laugh and we tell stories, and I think they think I'm a humorous person. I'm kind of like animated and I'm goofy, and I think they just look at me like, "Oh man, what is she doing?" And I think we have a pretty fun relationship behind the scenes.
All right. And during those rounds, and you can be honest, do you take any mulligans? Are there shots that aren't that don't end up, or is that a true
Oh
practice
yeah.
round?
I guess it depends on my mood.
Okay.
I feel like if there's like time constraints, I'll usually go with like a true practice round. Like when I played with Kona, that was like a true practice round. We like didn't really throw mulligans, and if we did throw mulligans, we only like counted our first scores and stuff like that. But I think the one at like Milo MacIver for Beaver State, I was thrown all over the place. And then for I think Portland, I was throwing a bunch of multiples too. I think it also depends on like the course. Like if I'm familiar with the course, I'm probably trying to practice like my tournament mindset rather than, practicing different shots if I've been there, multiple times. Or like a lot of the times this year on tour, I had never seen the course before and it was new, so I was really like experimental and really like creative with different lines and, trying to find different shots.
Now, according to your PGA site, you have 57 wins in your career. Is there any win that stands out as maybe not necessarily your favorite, but maybe a most memorable win?
I feel like I repeat it like all the time. But there was a Rocky Mountain, I think it was like a Rocky Mountain Women's Disc Golf Championship that was held at Blue Mountain in Montana. I want to say it was 2016 or 2017. But it was like right after I had turned pro and I had only ever really played with like local pros before. And so it was one of the first times I had ever played. Sarah Holcomb was there. I think Jessica Wiese was there. I think there were like a handful of the touring pros that'll kind of like dip into Montana and like Idaho sometimes for like A tiers and events like that. And so it was the first time I had competed with players of that like caliber. So I was like losing my mind anyway. And I don't know. I guess I repeat it all the time, but it was a really remarkable event because Sarah Holcomb and I not only did our scores tie, but we tied for the lead during the first round. And that was pretty
Oh,
cool.
wow. Okay.
I was chuffed. I was so excited, just to, have held my own against like such a skilled competitor and someone that I had looked up to so much. As a backhand player, I was like in awe of her amazing like, forehand skills and how technical she was as a player, and I loved her skill set and how she like carried herself professionally. But so we played the second round and we tied and were tied for the lead again on the second day. Like, wow. That's kind of weird. Doesn't happen all the time. And so we go into the final round, and I mean, I'm super duper nervous. And I am like, it was 2016 or 17. I was young at the time, and especially young as a player, and so I was just like locked on to Sarah. I don't even know if I was paying attention to the other two girls on the card. She was the only person I was focusing on, like shot for freaking shot. I was fighting for my life. It was so intimidating, and she is so cool and like collected most of the time. And so I was like, the panic sweats, you know what I mean? Like the sweat drops, coming down the anime forehead and stuff like that. I was like, ah, I'm keeping up with her shot for freaking shot. And so we finish the third round, all three rounds tied in the lead. And so it goes to a playoff. And I am losing my mind that I am even there. Is this real? Is this real freaking life? And so we go to hole one. And as I recall, I think I teed first. And it was not a good shot. I was like errant left, and I had kind of thrown it nose up, which was, my mistake at the time. And it hyzered out, and I was like knees shaking. I was like hands shaking. I was super duper nervous. And then she tees second, and she's 20 feet out. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, oh, I was like trying not to get down on myself, like 3 rounds you kept up, you did so good. And like I was really trying to be, not be too down on myself. And so I walk up to my putt and like it's far, but it's wide open. And so I'm like, I gotta be a pro. I
Yeah.
gotta run it. I have to run it.
You gotta
Like,
go for it.
you have to do it. And so that was a taste of like making pro decisions for the first time and like handling the pressure and stuff. Like, it was so silly. And so, against all odds and against everything that I thought that I was capable of, I made like a 65 foot, like ridiculous jump putt. And I guess I just like absolutely shook everyone, and Sarah missed. Just,
Wow.
I think she even hit high. She hit high, and then it came down, and I like, I cried. Obviously, I like totally lost it. And Sarah was like, "Oh my gosh, how did that even happen?" Like you could tell her brain was like, "What? Did this girl just come in here and do that? Like both of us were like just speechless, I think, at the
Wow.
odd event that had occurred. So that was pretty freaking memorable.
And earlier you'd mentioned that, one of the reasons you went with Westside was what they had, how they helped you on tour, and you actually you played a lot this year. In fact, you played almost as many events this year as the last 3 years combined. So a lot more disc golf. How were you able to balance like traveling as much as you did, like playing more, and then balance like your personal life and other responsibilities?
If I can be honest, it was not a balance. It was a lot of imbalance, if I can just
Okay.
be plain and simple with it. It was like, so I didn't really have a vehicle to travel in, so I had to borrow my brother's Toyota Prius. It was like a 2014 Toyota Prius or something like that. And then I gave him my like 2002 beat up Toyota Prius. We like Prius.
Right.
And then I needed somebody to travel with, and I didn't know who to travel with. And so I was like, oh, can my parents? And then my dad was able to travel with me and, blocked out all of this time in the year to come and like travel and support me and kind of like drive and, be a co-pilot. And so it all kind of like, it all really scrapped together. Not like 100%, but I feel like it was like a teensy weensy bit of an overcommitment. Someone like that didn't have a vehicle, or like I didn't really have the means to like go on tour. But with the support that Westside gave me, that was enough of like a stepping stone financially to allow me to kind of like, I kind of like make a bet, basically. It was a little like kind of a gamble. I was going out there hoping and, focusing on playing well and hopefully doing well at a couple of events and making it through the end of the year. Because basically, like projected, I was only going to make it about two-thirds of the way through the year with like the fixed amount that I had. So if I wasn't able to generate more, then discussions were going to be had, and like modulations were going to have to be made. So it was a little bit of a risk, and thankfully, I took a bet on myself, and luckily that bet kind of went through. And obviously the win at Texas State was super awesome, and that was really successful, with the discs and stuff, and that was like immensely helpful. And then I had a really good finish at Portland, playing with Kristen, so amazing. And that was a really decent payout, and that was super duper helpful. And so just a couple of good finishes, in the middle of the year really bolstered my ability to be able to finish. And man, I was so close to getting into the Disc Golf Pro Tour finale. I was so freaking close, but Maple Hill getcha.
Yeah, you mentioned Kristen. Was there any did you know her at all from when you were on Latitude?
Not even at all.
The first time you played with her?
Yeah, I mean, I had obviously, heard about her. She's obviously super successful, and so I had known of her, but we had never met or, had a conversation or anything like that before we were in hot competition.
So what for you winning, winning Texas States, which was better, that you won the tournament or that you beat Kristen Tatar to win?
As much as I respect and revere her, like as a competitor, I mean, her own and Holland all enriched that victory so very much. But I think, oh man, that's a really tough question because it really does mean a lot to like win a tournament and feel it was another moment, like getting sponsored by Latitude 64, where I felt bona fide, where I felt like, all right, I got like I have the badge of honor. I earned it. I did the thing, So I want to say that winning the tournament meant more, but as I was saying the words, Owen and Holland and Kristen making that win so much richer and so much more, so much more difficult to attain and all the more worth it. I think it was not only, beating Kristen, but just holding my own against three of the some of the best women in our sport was incredibly meaningful. Because if there were other players, if it were just three of their best, local pros, I think it would have been way different.
Winning them. Now, early on in your career, you mentioned kind of one of your goals each year was just playing more tournaments the next year. Do you think that's going to be possible next year? Are you going to play more than this year? Are you going to be on tour more?
That's definitely the goal. And I think this kind of touches back on the imbalance that I referred to. I spent a lot of time away from home, and a lot of my like energy, attention, and focus was solely on like disc golf and travel. So it was really difficult to divert attention to my home life, especially when it was so far away. And my boyfriend and I are trying to work together to kind of find some independence together and, buy a home or buy some property. And so I kind of fell behind a little bit on that like avenue in my personal life of kind of like putting my attention and focus towards that with him. And so that part of my life kind of fell. And then like, I wasn't able to do, research on like, buying a new vehicle and just kind of other things because I spent so much time away from home kind of got neglected a little bit. So I think I'm gonna need like a little bit of a potential catch-up year, but with the support only increasing, I feel super duper amazing about kind of like this off season and being able to put some attention towards my, personal life and some of those things that I was kind of, did put on the back burner feels really awesome. And then too, I mean, anyone will say, your personal life affects your disc golf and your disc golf affects your personal life. So being able to like get out on my own, I've lived in an apartment or I've rented or I've lived with my parents, my whole life. I've never had a home of my own. So having that and establishing that, I think is only going to like catapult more momentum and like allow for more kind of like focus and energy towards disc golf. So I think I may take a little bit of a recovery year to kind of like get some ducks in a row and get a better travel vehicle and just kind of like make it a little bit less last minute than like grabbing a
Right.
Prius with my dad and then like making a go for it. And so I think like, I don't know, I think like an RV or like a trailer might be in the mix and just, you
Okay.
know, being able to dive in and do some research on vehicles and maybe, you know, putting something together. I definitely still plan on playing as many tournaments as reasonably possible, but prioritizing and spending a little bit more time at home. But I think it's gonna shake and bake, you know. If you get the
All right.
reference, you get it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much. Of course, I wish you all the best next year, and I hope that all that works out. Is there anything else you want to add, say, or plug before we go?
Oh, let's see. I'm so bad at like being a salesperson. Don't doom scroll. Go outside. Go outside. And thank you so much for listening and sharing my story.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for listening. This is the West Side Discussion Podcast. I want to thank Sai and Nana for coming on the show. The theme song is What Would You Be Like by Akira the Don. We'll continue the discussion next time.
Thank you.